everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about SmackDown by my Grand Rapids, Grand Rapider, Sondra. Hi, Sondra.
Grand Rapidian? I think that's what we are.
Rapidian?
Grand Rapidians. Uh-huh.
Sounds like you just went for a piddle.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
A piddle is like a dog pee, basically.
Yeah, so. Yeah, accurate. So I guess that's what we are here in Grand Rapids. No, I don't think that's accurate, but, you know, whatever. I'm from Grand Rapids, and I like it, and that means I went to SmackDown Live last night, because it was in Grand Rapids at the Van Andel Arena.
SmackDown Live.
SmackDown what? Live.
So what's funny to me is, there's been a lot of positive reviews of this SmackDown show. Episode number 64 here in our series of reviewing these episodes, and there's a lot of good response online from people, and you were saying that when you came at the building, that you'd kind of thought the show was okay, but you weren't really blown away by it. But I think we figured out maybe why everyone at home enjoyed it, and you maybe walked away with a slightly less joyous feeling, because what we had was 2 hours of SmackDown and zero gender. Which I appreciate.
Zero Jinder Mahal on the actual program.
But that's not what happened to you in person.
That's not what happened to me in person. No, in person, I watched 2 hours of SmackDown, and it was good. Like, I'm not saying that SmackDown was bad. I just didn't think it was anything, like, monumental. I thought Sami Zayn's promo was excellent, and I thought the tech stuff was really fun. And there, you know, thinking back on the show, there was a lot of fun stuff to like. And then, you know, loads and loads of the crowd filed out for 205 Live, which was unfortunate, because I was really looking forward to 205 Live, actually. You know, 2 out of 3 falls with Rich Swann and TJP, and I knew I was going to get a Drew Gulak appearance of some kind. I was supposed to get Drew Gulak versus Akira Tozawa, but Drew Gulak ruined that by just attacking Akira Tozawa when he came out, which I was really bummed about, but it's hard for me to boo Drew Gulak because he's, like, my favorite. So, you know, I think part of leaving the arena and feeling a little down is, you know, like, okay, 205 Live was really fun, but the crowd wasn't into it. But the dark main event that they gave us last night, Kenny, and, you know, the dark main event is supposed to be the thing that keeps people there for 205 Live for SmackDown, right? Because, you know, people have a tendency to leave before 205 Live. It's filmed at a very inopportune time. I was talking with some people on Twitter about this. I feel like if they filmed 205 Live before SmackDown and not after SmackDown, it would get a much better response because the crowd's into it. The crowd's super ready for wrestling. The crowd's ready to react to whatever you give them. I mean, Ty Dillinger versus Mike Kanellis was a great dark match, and we had a lot of fun with it, and everyone got to chant 10, and it didn't even occur to me until later that it was 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. 17, right? Like, Dillinger had a whole thing online about 10-10. But the dark main event that they gave us to try to entice us to stay in the building to sit through 205 Live was Jinder Mahal defending his WWE Championship against Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode. So, needless to say, a lot of people filed out of the building before and during 205 Live.
No, first of all, I do want to say what was really funny was my internet chose to cut out for like 10 seconds, and it was when you were saying 10. So we have you on record going, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. So I enjoyed that as a noise. Well done, Sondra.
I aim to please. But unlike SmackDown Live last night, giving me a dark main event of Jinder Mahal versus Dolph Ziggler versus Bobby Roode, it wasn't very good. It was just like the most standard match you can imagine, right? I mean, the Singh brothers are fun. Jinder kind of hung out on the outside and tried to be a dick about stuff, and it was fine. It wasn't like an abomination of a match or anything. It wasn't the Truth Commission versus DOA that we're going to talk about on Retro Raw. But, you know, as far as dark main events go, those are always supposed to be the fun, like, house show style matches where fun stuff happens. And, like, I don't know, like, I one of our dark main events we had at one point had the Big Show and Cody Rhodes having really fun interactions and playing to the crowd. And there was really none of that. And then, you know, Jinder won, of course, because he retained his title and he pinned Dolph Ziggler. And then he goes to leave, which is fine. And then for some reason, they start playing Dolph Ziggler's music, even though Dolph Ziggler's thing is that he's not supposed to have music anymore, but they played his music for some reason. And then they just sort of started playing Bobby Roode's theme, and Bobby Roode, like, posed in the middle of the ring, which was supposed to be the, okay, send the crowd home happy because there's a babyface moment. There was no beatdown. There was no, you know, shenanigans. Nobody came out to make a save. Nothing like that. It was just all right, you get to hear Glorious for the third time tonight, I suppose. Okay.
Yep.
And that was it. So I think that's probably why leaving the arena, I was just kind of like, oh yeah, you know, that was fun. But thinking back to the actual episode of SmackDown, there was a lot of good stuff on it.
It just makes me laugh that, like, you know, in 1999, I think it was in, like, Toronto or something, they did a 6-man tag after Raw went off the air with, like, Austin, Mankind, and The Undertaker teaming up at the time when Undertaker was in the Ministry.
Right.
So he, like, was not teaming with anyone. So imagine, and then he, like, shared a beer with Austin and Mankind. You know, one of these cool moments, or, like, the night after WrestleMania 28 in Miami, where there's, like, a 10-man tag involving Daniel Bryan and John Cena. And you got Jinder against Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. Who's shat in your sandwich, Sandra?
I know, right? I mean, probably Randy Orton. I blame him.
All joking aside, it was a good episode of SmackDown, I thought, overall. So let's go through it. From Grand Rapids, Dasha Fuentes was outside as a robot, as only she can, earlier in the day, saying that Shane McMahon had been released from a medical facility on Sunday and taken home to recuperate from his injuries, so he would not be at SmackDown Live. Were you happy that Shane wasn't on the show to kind of sell the extent of the injuries?
I mean, it makes sense that Shane wasn't on the show to sell the extent of the injuries. It does make sense. It bums me out a little because I didn't get to, you know, dance to Here Comes the Money. But, I mean, I did on Sunday, so that's fine. I did get to see him. But it makes a lot of sense that he would be off TV to sell the injuries. I think he should be, because I think it should be something brutal. I mean, he jumped off the cell through an announce table. That shouldn't be something that you're just like, hey, I'm back. I'm here and ready to go, right? And plus, it makes Kevin Owens look like even more of a dickhead when he's like, yeah, look, I beat up Shane McMahon pretty bad, didn't I? So, yeah, I think it's a good thing that he's selling the injuries.
We got a big video package opening the show to kind of show you what happened in the main event. And then we kick off the show with the Usos coming out. It is, after all, their penitentiary. So who better to open the show than the men who run the penitentiary?
I was a little surprised Sami Zayn didn't open the show, actually. I was thinking that he probably would to explain himself right away, but I did like how later in the show he made us wait. And opening with the Usos, I was definitely okay with that.
Sandra, too. I think we need to get something out of the way. Sami Zayn doesn't care about you.
I know.
Sami Zayn doesn't care what you think. He's not going to come out just to make you happy. Oh, yay! Sandra's there in Grand Rapids. He's not there to make you happy. He's there to be with his best friend and his brother, Kevin Owens. Good for him.
My heart is still broken.
But yeah, no, it was a good idea to keep people waiting, because, I mean, I think everybody was most intrigued about what he was going to say, so it makes sense to not give that away straight away. The Usos come out. I love their theme tune more and more every time I hear it.
It's so good.
Like, today I was getting ready to go out, and I ended up just playing the Usos theme tune on a loop for 20 minutes, and I was just walking about my house talking about how my day one was H. And anyway, just you know, look into my life. But they called the New Day out, and they wanted to say something face to face. They talked about, you know, what happened on Sunday, and, you know, all the hell they went through together. You know, and they basically in the end said, you know, what we're trying to say is respect. The New Day offered handshakes. They were gonna shake hands and kind of, you know, do that big respect thing that you kind of get after a war in wrestling sometimes, when the music that we never want to hear, the Hype Bros, interrupted. What was your reaction when the Hype Bros interrupted this beautiful moment?
I rolled my eyes. I rolled my eyes hard. I was just like, oh, the fucking Hype Bros. And I think I yelled, but you guys lose all the time. Like, you can't challenge for the titles. You haven't won a match in so long. And, so you know, similar to how I reacted to Dolph Ziggler.
So a lot of what this episode is going to be is, and how did you react to this? Because usually Sandra reacts mentally, which is what we like.
Yes.
So they come out, and Mojo Rawley gets in the mic and says, you know, it's the same two teams every week. Nobody else gets a shot. But before they can continue, Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin come out.
Sandra's reaction was happy. I was so excited. I cheered like crazy. Well, and it was funny, too, because, I mean, the Usos and the New Day thing before all of the interruptions, it got a little hard to gauge how to react to it exactly, because you want to, like, normally when I go to wrestling, with the exception of a certain tag match on this show, I'll try to boo the bad guys and I'll try to cheer the good guys, right? There are exceptions, but when it comes to Usos and New Day, like I'm trying to boo the Usos and do my part and be like, no, you're dastardly. I love you, but you're dastardly, right? But then they're talking about respect, and they're talking about how much they respect the New Day and how they've been to war, and you know, and then they're talking about how all the other teams in the locker room suck, and the New Day seems to be agreeing with that, and I'm like, this is making the Usos seem a little too good guy, and the New Day kind of dickish for agreeing with them, and they're almost having like the truce Us, like they said. So it was kind of interesting gauging the crowd reaction around me, because everyone was just kind of like, I really like these two teams together, and I kind of agree that I want more of this, but also I don't think I'm supposed to agree, and it was kind of difficult.
Yeah, it was an odd exchange. The Usos were kind of being quite babyface-esque, and the Usos are like the heel tag team that are, you know, you take them very seriously.
Yeah, they're like the only one.
They've got a good pedigree about them. You know, they've got a long lineage of being in WWE. And I think that the Usos, they've only really turned the corner this last 12 months to become this. I would say that they now are a great tag team. I would say before
they
were good.
Oh, they absolutely are.
But I really think the heel turn, because like, remember last year they were like on the WrestleMania pre-show with the Dudleys and stuff, and they were good, but it was face paint Uso. It wasn't, there was nothing.
I genuinely had forgotten about that until you mentioned it right now. So it was incredibly forgettable. And no, ever since turning heel, especially the Usos have really come into their own as characters. I think because they're allowed to be personalities and not just face paint and super kicks.
Agreed. So they do this thing where it's kind of, I mean, I saw it as a kind of a momentary respect thing, but they're going to go back to being the Usos, which I hope so, because I don't really want them to turn. But the Hype Bros come out to ruin it. Then Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin come out. Chad Gable says, you know, we're not here to complain. We're here to tell, you know, Hype Bros, get to the back of the line, because we broke you at Hell in a Cell.
I appreciated that line, because they're not wrong, right? Like, the Hype Bros have no business coming out and trying to challenge the Usos when Gable and Benjamin are in existence.
So,
and beat them.
Exactly. So we're trying to get the Hype Bros to the back of the line when the music of Breezango hits. Sondra, the reaction in the arena sounded superb.
Everyone in the arena loved Breezango. I was wearing my Fashion Police shirt and everything, because I was really looking forward to Pulp Fashion on this show. I think that's another reason I was a little disappointed, because we didn't get Pulp Fashion. We did get Breezango Wrestling. So
only you would be more gutted that in person you got to see them out doing a promo and a match rather than the usual backstage segment.
I wanted both. I was promised Pulp Fashion, damn it.
I have a theory coming up about Pulp Fashion, actually, which we'll get to. I think I've cracked the code.
Ooh,
Fashion Files, so we'll get to that.
But yeah, out of all the teams that came out, the Fashion Police were by far the most over in the arena. Like, everybody loved Fashion Police.
This was like the first time that they had, it was the first time that I think they've came out live where I feel like the love of the vignettes has came through in the reaction for them. Like,
yeah.
Like, because they got like a big reaction.
I would say they did at Backlash as well.
They did get a big reaction, but I think that at that point there were still some people who didn't really know what to make of them. But whereas I feel like everybody kind of knows their act now. Everyone's in on the joke. Tyler, then the Ascension came out. Sondra, your reaction to them?
I love them now. I do. And the best part about this was Tyler Breeze going, "Stop following us!"
The Ascension then talked about how they, you know, they don't want to be in the wasteland anymore, because that's where they're from. And the Usos ended up telling them off, and they were like, you know, making fun of all the teams, and as they're about to make fun of Breezango, the New Day are like, no, Breezango are cool. And the Usos are like, oh yeah, we like Fashion Files. And like, the Usos get in on it, so they're all okay with the Fashion Police.
Did it come through that the crowd pretty much erupted at that too?
Yes. It did, which was great. And then Daniel Bryan comes out and cuts a very strange promo that I still don't understand. He comes out and he says, this isn't a good night for this. Please get the hell out of my ring. This isn't a good night for this. And people chat no, and he goes, okay, Fatal 4-Way match to determine the number one contenders. Yay, yes. And I was like, what? Why was he heel for 2 minutes? I don't understand.
Well, I don't think he was supposed to be a heel. I think he was supposed to be, like, confronting the Usos, who are supposed to be the heels. I think part of it is that the Uso promo came across as so babyface that, you know, everyone was into what the Usos and the New Day were saying. And then, so when Daniel Bryan came out to kick them out of the ring, you know, the entire crowd, we were all just like, no, don't kick them out of the ring. We want more of this. We want more of the Usos and the New Day because they're fantastic, right? So that was what I think the no's were for. But the crowd was very against Daniel Bryan here. It was very weird to be booing Daniel Bryan for, you know, kicking the Usos and the New Day out of the ring. But then as soon as he promised us a fatal four-way match right here, right now, we were like, oh, okay. So then we get to see wrestling and now we're happy again. It was a very strange opening segment alignment-wise all around, I would say.
Yeah, I think overall it was a good segment. I enjoyed that the other tag teams got to come out and get involved and... You know, even though Daniel Bryan's promo, it's one of those things like when The Miz was on Raw saying, you know, Jason, they're all booing you, and nobody was booing him. Like, mm-hmm. it's like, scripted lines don't always work.
Yeah, it just didn't fit. And it looked like Bryan got a little flustered with the no's. Like, he wasn't expecting everyone to go, no, 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 no. Because, I don't know, he tripped up on one of his words and stuff. But he brought it back. It was fine. It ended up being okay.
It was fine. That led us into a fatal four-way match for the shot of the tag titles. We had the Usos in commentary, or sitting beside commentary, sorry. So it's Gable and Benjamin, the Hype Bros, Breezango and the Ascension. It kind of ends up coming down to Gable and Benjamin and Breezango. But in the end, there's a really cool spot where Tyler Breeze ends up as if he's about to do like a hurricanrana on Shelton Benjamin, and then Shelton Benjamin catches him for the powerbomb, and then like Breeze tries to like roll down as if he's just trying to get away from it, but eventually he ends up having to come back up, and that's when they do the kind of top rope powerbomb finish thing that they do. Gable and Benjamin get the win. They're the number one contenders. What did you think of the match and the victors? The choice of Gable and Benjamin being the ones to get the tag title shot against the Usos.
Really fun match, I thought. I mean, there were some parts in the middle where it was just like, okay, this is the Hype Bros are doing a thing. I mean, the Hype Bros actually get booed quite a bit when they come out. And when the Hype Bros were against the Fashion Police or when the Hype Bros were against Gable and Benjamin, like, they were getting booed for sure. And it's weird because none of the teams in the Fatal 4-Way are technically heels right now. I mean, don't try and tell me the Ascension are heels when they're doing amazing things on the Fashion Files and, you know, wanting to be friends with Breeze and Fandango. So it's kind of weird that there just aren't any other heel tag teams, and it almost seems like the Hype Bros are filling that role, even though they're technically supposed to still be babyface. But yeah, I mean, the match had a lot of fun spots in it. It was, you know, it was a good time to watch, and I really liked when it came down to Gable and Benjamin versus the Fashion Police. Like, that's a rivalry I would not be mad about seeing. I think they worked really well together. Obviously, Tyler Breeze is great. I mean, all of them are. All of them are great, right? And Gable and Benjamin were my picks going into this for the winners because I think having a feud with the Usos is going to help bring Gable and Benjamin more into the spotlight because they really haven't done a whole lot since becoming a team, but they're both really good at wrestling. And the crowd reacts to Chad Gable and his suplexes and him being amazing. So I think they could pull off some killer, killer matches that could really help Gable and Benjamin. I don't know if they're going to win it right away, but I think they're the right choice of number one contenders because as much as I would love to see Breezango versus the Usos again, and I would love to see that, obviously, it is something that we've seen and it feels like they're doing their own thing. So I think it'll be really good for the tag division to have Gable and Benjamin kind of rise to prominence to have another big name tag team. And then, you know, maybe New Day can fight with a certain pair of people who've just gotten back together as best friends.
The thing that came out of this show was, there's a tag team division again, which is good.
Yeah.
I liked Gable and Benjamin being the winners because Breezango are so over that they don't really need to win a match like this right now. It's not really what people care about with them, so I liked that they got kind of serious and they were like contenders and almost got the win.
Yeah.
So I liked that happened. I don't care about the Hype Bros, but, you know, to be fair, I think them as heels could be more fun than them as babyfaces because the Hype Bros as a concept is such a heel concept to me.
It really is.
And the Ascension are just the Ascension, you know? With the best.
I love the Ascension as this anomaly. Like, you don't really know what they are or what they're trying to be, but I just kind of like that they're there.
What I appreciate is the Ascension have never let me down when Like, if I'm at a wrestling show and the Ascension are wrestling the card, they allow me to go and get a drink and something to eat. And I appreciate that about them. I do. I really do.
You gotta appreciate them for what they are. No, the Ascension have their place. And I was kind of surprised that Tyler Breeze, you know, took the loss here, but it didn't really bother me that much. And I think the end spot was clever. And yeah, so I enjoyed it. And I think it's the right choice for going forward.
Dasha Fuentes is backstage trying to not combust. And she is outside of a placarded dressing room that says Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. They now have their own dressing room together.
I was not ready to feel so many emotions about a shared locker room. I looked at Mr. Sandro and just pouted and went, they have their own locker room and they're together. Because I was so sad.
She tried to get a word with both of them, but unfortunately they are making us wait.
Assholes.
We get so we're going to hear from them before the end of the show. We're going to have a tag match with Orton and Nakamura against Rusev and Aiden English. Then we get Natalya backstage cutting, again, one of the worst promos of all time. But I think at this point, is she trying to cut bad promos? But anyway.
I don't think she is. I think that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. So Natalya is showing off her SmackDown Women's title to Lana and Tamina. Lana says it's going to look much better than Tamina. It'll look ravishing. Natalya says she used to fantasize about being champion, but now it's real and it's hers. And she also had a little pointy cat headband
thing. She had a
cat
ear headband, which was pretty fantastic. I won't lie. I appreciated that.
She's nothing if not committed to her gimmick. Carmella shows up in what I don't know if it can be classified as wrestling gear. It feels more like, I don't know.
Well, it's kind of like a leotard.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like she's away for a night out in the dancing. Nothing wrong with that. Carmella again shows up with her Money in the Bank briefcase, and Natalya says, "Well, I think we can all agree that I deserve to be champion more than Charlotte." Charlotte comes in, Natalya says, "Oh, why the boo-boo face? Did you break your father's heart again?" Charlotte smacks the piss out of her, starts brawling with her, then Becky and Naomi, you can see them briefly brawling with Tamina and Lana, and Charlotte is kind of being held away by referees. Hot segment to, keep the Charlotte and Natalya thing going, I guess. I assume from this that we're getting more of it, so how do you feel about that feud continuing?
I'm fine with the feud continuing. I think it should continue given the way the match ended at Hell in a Cell. I mean, it makes sense that Charlotte would get a rematch, right? Like, she was kind of screwed out of a chance at a proper match and a proper match finish at Hell in a Cell when Natalya got out the chair. So I'm fine with it continuing. I hope they put on better matches than they did at Hell in a Cell. I hope it goes other places. The segment felt a little flat to me, I guess, just because it was another, okay, yep, we're just talking. And I like Charlotte attacking Natalya. I want there to be more fire between them. I don't know. It's throwing all of the women into one segment in one story and not giving me individual feuds. And I'm still raging about that. And I will complain about it every week until they give me something better. So it's, yeah.
That's fair.
It bugs me that there are that many performers in the segment not doing anything. They're just non-players, right? They're just there because they're there. And yes, they're being trotted out on screen, but we could actually be having more stories between some of these women. There is time on the show. You can reallocate things. You can tell compelling stories. You've done it before. Please do it again. I would really, really appreciate it so that the SmackDown women's division gets more than 5% of the show, and also so that people are invested in what's going on, because I think it being Charlotte versus Natalya is perfectly fine with me, but when the division doesn't feel like a whole proper, fully formed thing, it's harder to care about even the top feud, because it's just like, oh, these are the two women who are involved in the feud, and it doesn't feel like, part of an organic world where stories transition and, players are all involved.
I can understand that. I think for me personally on this show, I wasn't as bothered about there not being more women's stuff on this episode because I thought that everything else that was on there was merited enough of being on there. I think what it comes down to more is what you were saying about it's not that there's a couple of women's stories going on right now where one of them needed to be explored more, which is more the problem, I think. Because the Natalya and Charlotte thing was kind of taken care of by the backstage segment, but there's not a secondary feud. So instead, next we got Becky Lynch versus Carmella. Becky beats her pretty decisively in like 3 minutes with a disarmer. Which I guess, you know, it was nice to see Becky get some TV time, get a win, but...
But it's just there's no reason for this match. And Becky Carmella could be such a fun program, right? Especially because Becky has a history of dissension with Ellsworth and has a history of, you know, confronting Carmella over various things. And it's a program I would really like to see with a story behind it. And I thought the match, I mean, it wasn't long, obviously, but it was a fun little match. And, you know, there was Becky getting in Ellsworth's face was a good time. And it was really cute. There was a kid behind me who was like screaming. He was super into Becky Lynch, super, super into Becky Lynch. And Carmella kicked Becky at one point. He goes, "Oh no." And then when Becky rolls and gets Carmella in the disarmer, he goes, "Oh yes, yes." Like he was just so excited to see Becky Lynch. So it's like, she's someone who still has people intrigued by her, right? But she just isn't being allowed to be a fully formed person or character. She's just a star. And you see her because she's a star. But it would be nice if she also had a story to go along with her star power, because how long can it last to just, you know, trot her out as a smiling, completely flat baby face?
Yeah, I can see your point. So I guess we'll see next week if they do. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't think they're going to have a secondary feud next week, but it'd be nice if they did.
I don't think that they will. I will be very happy if they do.
It's a double-edged sword for me, though, because I want a secondary feud, but I don't want Tamina and Lana to be involved. So... It's tough for me. It's Sophie's choice all over again, really. Anyway, up next, we also, before the Carmella and Becky Lynch match, we got an interview with Baron Corbin backstage with Renee. He said it feels good to shove the belt in the face of the keyboard warriors. Talks about AJ Styles mocking him for squandering opportunities, and he said, you know, the house that Styles built becomes the house that Styles squandered. Later tonight when he beats him. So Baron Corbin's just a wanker, and I quite like when heels are just arseholes. So
he is very good at being an arsehole, that's true.
It's time for what we've all been waiting for. What's going to happen? Kevin Owens comes out with a great new shirt called Fight Anyone, and he is limping to the ring. He's got his left arm wrapped up. He's selling the injuries from Hell in a Cell. He's in the ring and he's smiling. He said, "I sent Shane McMahon straight to hell. Now he's gone. He's never coming back. But you almost lost me too." He saw the white light at one point during the match and felt his soul start to leave his body. He was at the gates. He was talked to by St. Peter. St. Peter told him that although heaven would love to have you, you're still needed down there. But he gave him his own guardian angel in the form of Sami Zayn. What a fucking line.
I know, right? Especially after, you know, all of his, like, people like me go to heaven. And so he's really, like, he's egging that on.
Mm-hmm. He talks about, here we are all gathered tonight in Kevin's heaven, otherwise known as the Kevin Owens Show. And he now introduced his best friend and guardian angel, Sami Zayn. My favorite thing is that Sami Zayn came out really fucking smug and dancing to his music. I fucking loved it. Because if they're going to lose the music, I'm glad we got one smug Sami Zayn dance out of it. That's what I wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he came out looking, and at this point, you know, I don't know what Sammy's going to say. I don't know if he's going to be reluctant. I mean, the fact that they're sharing a locker room means that it seems like they are best friends again, right? But at this point, I still wasn't sure. And it was still really hard for me to boo Sami Zayn, because he's Sami Zayn, right? And it just goes against all of my natural tendencies to try and boo this man. But
what was the reaction like in the arena at this point? So when Owens has cut his promo, Sammy's just coming out, what's the vibe like in the arena?
Kind of confused, actually. Some people still wanted to cheer him. Some people were booing. It almost seemed like there was an air of anticipation to find out how we should react to him, right? Because we weren't sure during the entrance, because he still had the music. He was still dancing. He looked like an asshole doing it. But I think the crowd just wasn't sure how to react to a heel Sami Zayn until he started talking. And then we got a little bit better at booing him.
So the promo was just fantastic that he cut. He comes out, he says, you know, it's funny Kevin Owens first said, you know, you need to explain to these people why you did what you did. And he thanked him, and Sammy's laughing. He said, you know, it's funny that you thanked me, because, you know, you powerbombed me in the apron a few weeks ago, opened my eyes. My life's been about pleasing people and trying to do everything the right way. And all it brought me was mediocrity. But you became the Intercontinental Champion, the Universal Champion, the United States Champion. And I thought my day would come, and you know, if down the road, maybe in 5 years, and I did things the right way, my day might come. And then he thought his day might come when Shane McMahon invited him to join SmackDown. He talks about, you know, this is the land of opportunity, and on Raw he'd been misused, which he absolutely had. And that was the last meeting that he ever had with Shane McMahon. He kept coming to work with a smile on his face until he tried to warn Shane about what Kevin Owens is capable of. He brushed me off, Sami Zayn was talking about. He ignored me, and that's when I realised that Shane never cared about me. Sami said he was watching along with everyone else and he wanted Shane to win the match. And then Shane had Kevin Owens beat, and he looks at Kevin Owens and says, you know, he had you beat, buddy. But then he chose to climb back up to the top of the Hell in a Cell, and he said, you know, Kevin Owens has been a lot of things to me over the years, but one thing he'll always be is my brother. And he said, you know, Shane wanted to end the career of Kevin Owens, or worse, so I saved my brother because it was the right thing to do. And he said, you know, he's despised Kevin Owens for a long time, but he figured out that the reason he despised him is because Kevin Owens was right. Sami Zayn says, there's nothing left to say but thank you. They hugged. Kevin Owens is going, Sami Zayn! And Sami Zayn is going, Kevin Owens! And they keep congratulating each other and holding one another's hands up and hugging. And, Sandra, any thoughts on this?
This just breaks my heart all over again. It's so perfect. It's so perfect. In fact, a lot of what Sami Zayn was saying in this promo is exactly what I said was his motivation on our Hell in a Cell podcast that we did right after Hell in a Cell on Patreon.
Where can people listen to that? How can they get...
Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, everyone. $3 or yep. more subscribers per month can listen to all of our thoughts about Hell in a Cell. Almost 2 hours. Yeah. And so it was just very odd hearing... you know, so exactly the story play out, which means that, you know, I was right in interpreting the story, but also it means that WWE understands what the story should be. And part of why this feels so compelling and so natural and so perfectly, perfectly sad is because it does make sense. The story makes perfect sense, given that Sami was misused on Raw, that Shane McMahon did brush off Sami Zayn. Like, his motivations for wanting to help Kevin Owens over Shane McMahon, I understand them. They still break my heart because of who I want Sami Zayn to be. I still want him to be the guy who, you know, does things his way and proves that you can rise above and you can, you know, achieve greatness without having to stoop to nefarious levels. And he's not that guy anymore. And that sucks, because that just means that humanity sucks. Like, Sami Zayn was the pinnacle and the best of us. And now he's basically just saying, like, no, you have to be a dickhead to get ahead in this world. And that's heartbreaking to me. But the story is so perfect. And them hugging each other and, you know, raising each other's hands and being utter pricks about it. You can tell they're having so much fun with this too, because, you know, obviously, like, in real life, they are best friends, and they're both so incredibly good on the microphone and so incredibly good at sounding natural on the microphone that this really does feel like two guys, you know, having a chat. And I mean, the little details, like Sami saying, you know, he had you beat, buddy, sorry, or, you know, Kevin calling him out, and I don't know, whatever. Like, they have all those little details that just make the conversation sound so natural. And I'm all in on it, even though my heart is broken into 1,000 pieces. And Sami Zayn tweeting, when life is hard, you have to change. I'm just like, no, but don't change. Be my Sami Zayn. This is the best thing for both of them. I am so into this story. It's so, so good.
Yeah, this was a great promo. I loved it. Sami Zayn just had, like, the best reasoning for doing it. I was worried they might come up with a lazy reason, but it really made sense. And, yeah, I mean, I love the idea of when he finally decided to change his mind, when Shane had the match won that wasn't enough for him. They clearly must have had this planned out.
Yeah, because he saw that Shane was just a prick, right? Like, that's the way they see Shane McMahon, as just an arrogant prick who doesn't care about anyone but himself. And actually, Shane McMahon as a character is kind of an arrogant hothead. So it all makes such logical sense.
I think what works about it is, like, they're in danger of having these guys be the good guys, but I think because of what Kevin Owens did to Vince and what he said about Shane's kids and stuff, like, you can see why Shane would want to continue to, you know, deliver punishment. But at the same time, it also was a good catalyst as to why Sami turned. Innes, our Facebook community guy, or the guy who created our Facebook community, he talked about a small detail that I didn't realise until he'd pointed out. Sammy kept mouthing to Kevin Owens during the promo, "Mon frère," which means my brother in French. Ugh.
That's just amazing. Tremendous. I didn't notice that, but that's amazing.
I've not been as excited about Sami Zayn in a long time. And I think he's going to do really good work here. And I was like, I was curious to see how he was going to do as a heel. And I think he did great.
I think he did great. I never had any doubt that he was going to do great as a heel either. Because, I mean, you put Sami Zayn on a microphone and he's going to do well. He's incredibly underrated, I feel like, as far as promos go. Because he always makes everything sound natural and you believe him. And it's the same thing as a heel is with a face, right? Like, I believe him and I believe what he's saying. And he came across so smarmy about it. And I think because Kevin Owens has been such a despicable dickhead, and because Kevin Owens just gave that whole promo about going to heaven and St. Peter and, you know, like his guardian angel, Sami Zayn, and he's so over the top with it that, you know, you don't want to cheer Kevin Owens. He's a prick. And, you know, Sammy turning to the dark side with Kevin Owens, it's, I don't know, it's beautiful. It's beautiful and it's sad, and I'm still really heartbroken about it.
And they're just, like, they were such arseholes, like, congratulating each other and putting their arms... Yeah. It was so good. Like, keep these guys together forever as best friends.
Until the eventual turn, which will break our hearts all over again. Like, they will fight forever. They will forever be linked. Like I said on the Hell in a Cell podcast, like, they will forever be linked. And this is proving why. Because they can be... I was a little surprised, actually. A little surprised that Sami Zayn is just such best friends with Kevin Owens right away. I was wondering if there was going to be some reluctance. I think they could have stretched it out. I don't think they had to. I think this works. I think... it would have worked either way. So I was curious to see if there was going to be reluctance. Clearly there wasn't. And yeah, I'm curious to see where they go as a team. If they're going to be in the tag division, if they're going to try and be in the main event scene, like what's going to go on there. I don't know.
These guys are the top two heels on SmackDown. I don't care what MD tells me or whatever.
No, they are.
Whatever belt anybody has, these two, excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Up next, we have the tag team title match, Rusev and Aiden English. We don't get to see their entrance, but Sandra, I believe you did get to see Aiden English's entrance, and Aiden English, who celebrated a birthday this past weekend, so happy birthday to Aiden English. I assume that you cried and came at the same time, and Aiden English sang in the ring.
Of course I did. It's a bummer that you guys didn't get to see the entrance. You didn't see any of it, right? Like, because Aiden English sang a beautiful song about Rusev Day.
What I felt like was happening was that we both got what we wanted here. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I got to see Nakamura hit a Kinshasa on Aiden English and defeat him, which is what I wanted. And you got to see Aiden English perform a song. So I feel like we both got what we wanted, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely important, and it was...
When was the last time SmackDown Live brought us together, Sandra?
See, I mean, SmackDown Live is magic, isn't it?
It used to be,
yeah. Maybe it's getting back there again. Maybe we...
It's fun. Isn't it funny that, like, somebody can say to me, Kenny, what was your favorite SmackDown era? Was it the time where James Ellsworth was continuing to beat the world champion every week, or when Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens were a heel duo running the place? And I'd be like, the Ellsworth and Styles era was probably better. What?
I mean, it kind of was, though. It kind of was. But no, I love the Aiden English Rusev tag team partnership, whatever they have going on. It totally works for me, because of course it does. But it was so great too, because after Aiden English sang his Rusev Day song, like, Rusev is just like raising his arms, and they were bowing to each other and, like, just, you know, over hamming it up, trying to get the crowd to react to them. So I don't know when the camera came back on. Were they, like, celebrating, or was it...
It literally came back. I think there was a bit of timing issue with this show, because we only came back when Orton was kind of like... I think Orton had got in the ring, or Orton was about at the ring. Orton was definitely, like, on the aisle, so, like, we didn't see anything before that. And then later on, for the main event, we only came back when AJ and Corbin were both in the ring.
Oh.
So there was a lot of entrance parts that didn't really make the cut. I mean, there was a lot of stuff on this show for how short it is, you know, because SmackDown without an ad break is, without ad breaks, is about an hour and 25 minutes.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think Rusev is a good guy for Aiden English to bounce off of, because Aiden English's act is ridiculous. It's not...
Yes.
I think that's the thing. The more ridiculous it is, the funner it can be, and Rusev is king of ridiculous, so the two of them together makes sense. I have a question for you, though. So it's your standard tag match, and, you know, Orton and Nakamura worked pretty well together. In the end, Orton hits the RKO on Rusev, and then Nakamura delivers the Kinshasa on Aiden English. So my question to you, because a lot of people have been talking about this week, is talk to me about Nakamura. Talk to me about where you think he is on SmackDown right now, where you see him going, and how much, if any, do you think the loss to Jinder hurt his character, his momentum, his place on the card? All of the above, I guess.
I don't know that his loss to Jinder actually affected his place on the card that much, because I don't think he was feeling like a really big player in the first place. I think people are still reacting very well to him, like his entrance and everything. People are still really into singing the entrance. People are still really into seeing Nakamura. I mean, the reaction for him in the arena was good. I don't know if it was outstanding. It certainly wasn't going to be like when he debuted or anything like that. But I think he's been on a downward spiral for a while in terms of not putting on killer matches and not being involved in programs that really suit his strengths. So I don't know if the loss to Jinder is like the death of his career or if it's just another thing that happened, but he doesn't feel like a huge main eventer right now. Randy Orton and Nakamura did seem like a big deal, but probably not as big of a deal as it should have. Like, I mean, Rusev and Aiden English are not on the level of Nakamura and Randy Orton if you look at star power wise, right? But it just kind of felt like, oh yeah, I guess they do belong in this match together. I don't know. Like, then I'm probably the worst one to ask because I haven't been as into Nakamura in the first place as a lot of people were. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if it really makes as much of a difference as I thought it would, but he doesn't feel like as big a deal as he used to. And I don't know if that's the loss to Jinder that did it. I think it's been an issue that's been ongoing.
It's interesting that the two guys in this match, the two babyfaces, are the two guys who have put Jinder over so far in his title reign. And I think arguably they both feel like lesser stars, in a sense. Like, it's weird because this felt very much like this match was designed for Nakamura to get a big win and feel like Nakamura again. And from a lot of people that I've spoken to, people just think... I just don't think MD believes that Nakamura could have lost the way he did. It's almost like... I don't know, I'm trying to think... Is there any other example? It's like... Oh, I'm trying to think of anything that I can bring up. It'd be like when AJ Styles debuted in the Royal Rumble in 2016 and he got eliminated by Heath Slater. You'd be like, no, come on. That's not what's going to happen. And... But
well, I think that almost feels more believable just because it could be a fluke thing, right? Like getting thrown over a rope. I think, it's kind of like we said on the Hell in a Cell podcast too. It feels like I'm watching something that's being scripted badly. Because
yeah, and I think that somebody had said today, I think it was somebody in our community, I can't remember exactly who, so I apologize because whenever I try and look for things while we're on air, it really buggers up my internet connection because, you know, wrestling. But somebody had said, I really... great angle that I would love to see is, you know, what if AJ is the one to dethrone Jinder Mahal and then Nakamura wins the Rumble and that's your world title match for SmackDown at WrestleMania? And I think that'd be good, but I do think that going off the back of what a couple other people were saying, I think you actually do need to do some rebuilding work to Nakamura, because what you're telling the audience right now is Nakamura's not good enough to beat Jinder Mahal. That's the story that you've told. And you've told that story not just in the sort of cheaty way, you've told it in the, oh, Nakamura's just not good enough to beat him, period. Jinder's better. And I don't think MD believes it, so I don't know what you do, I don't know how you, maybe it's just a thing of like, in time, maybe it'll get better, maybe, you know, if Nakamura has a strong showing at Survivor Series. But it's one of those things, again, it feels like anyone who is around, I mean, I'm trying to not get into the same arguments we always do, so I'm trying to sort of skirt around it It's like I'm trying to walk around the shit without having to pick it up, you know? Sometimes, like, oh God, what the fuck was my point? Jesus Christ, brain freeze.
I think you were saying that anyone who gets in the vicinity of gender is just kind of broken, right?
Yes, exactly. So maybe Nakamura not being around him will by default make him Nakamura again. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe that's where it's going to go. But I think that it's just such a, you know, for anybody who, and again, I'm not, if people enjoy gender, that's their own prerogative. But like, I think that the sign of a champion not working is that when anyone's around him, they feel like a lot less of a star. And that when they're not around him, they feel bigger again, is kind of the, what you wouldn't want to happen.
Right.
With a world champion. Like, it's like the opposite. It's like, you know, on Raw, how much bigger of a star did Samoa Joe feel when he was facing off against Brock Lesnar for the title? Like, he felt like a huge star because he was vying for the title. And obviously, you know, it's very unfair to compare Brock and gender. You know, that's like comparing a beautiful steak to a dog shit. But, you know, it is what it is. But for you, as someone who's a little bit less gender jaded than I am, for you, what would you like to see in the next, just the next 3 months, say, for the WWE Championship to just feel like the top title on the show? What would you like to see them do? It doesn't matter whether it's gender's got or what would make you more invested in it as a title on a program?
I think not having it on Jinder Mahal would make me more invested in it, because I feel like with Jinder Mahal as champion right now, it's exactly what you're saying. And one of the points I agree with you on most is that Jinder is breaking storytelling, because it just feels like an inevitability that whoever feuds with Jinder, no matter how big a name, it just feels like, well, they're going to lose because they want to keep it on Jinder. So they're just going to lose regardless of whether that makes any storyline sense or sense with the characters or anything like that. So I think getting the title away from Jinder Mahal is important just so that we can advance storytelling and start to tell a new story that isn't a failure in terms of a world title scene. And then Jinder Mahal can still be useful on the roster. I actually think he could be a good heel. I just don't think that he, as world champion, is working out or doing any benefit to the show. So, I mean, I'm the worst at fantasy booking, so I don't know what I would like to see. I really like the idea of AJ taking the belt from Jinder and then going on to feud with anybody else. Like, Nakamura would be the ideal, obviously. But, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be against Kevin Owens taking the belt from Jinder and then, you know, having Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn somehow be a world title feud. Anything at this point would be better than having Jinder Mahal retain the belt, because I just don't think it's working. And like, where I agree with you most is that it breaks storytelling and it makes it feel inauthentic, and it just feels like a black hole that's like sucking other characters into it and sucking them down. It actually does remind me some of when Roman Reigns was so like, was breaking storytelling because everyone that goes up against Roman Reigns just fails. And when John Cena in the past has broken storytelling because lol, Cena wins, right? And Roman Reigns and John Cena are better performers than Jinder Mahal. But I think it's the same type of situation where you watch a show and something feels more like an inevitability than an organic, authentic, ongoing story. And so I want the story to actually be the thing and not, oh yeah, this guy is just going to continue to have it.
I think what's interesting is that a lot of people talk about, you know, who's the one to take the belt from Jinder. And, you know, we talk about Nakamura and we talk about AJ as the kind of top potentials. And I think that a lot of people kind of hit the nail on the head over the weekend when it was, I don't think it's going to feel what we all want it to feel. You know, I think people are just fatigued now. So I think that people just, you know, once the belt's off of them, then we can start the rebuild process.
Yeah, and I think for everyone who was saying about Nakamura, like, oh, well, that's not the way I want Nakamura's title reign to start. Well, at this point, we're in a situation where whoever beats Jinder Mahal, it's not going to feel like this huge climactic thing, right? Because it's just not going to. Whoever starts their title reign after Jinder Mahal, we just have to accept that it might start flat, but that doesn't mean that the title reign itself has to be bad. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me if winning it in a bad match is the start to the next person's title reign. I just want another title reign to begin, and then they can go on to build themselves as a world champion and be more compelling. And then we can kind of move on from this. And that's what I want.
Also, I think just to say something positive about Jinder, I think what would be a cool gimmick for Jinder would be for him to kind of go back to his former partnership with Rusev that they used to have. And I think that, like, Rusev, Jinder, Aiden English, and the Singh Brothers as a kind of, like, mid-card faction could be fun. You know, because
I think that could be great, actually.
You get Aiden English doing the singing for them, you've got the Singh Brothers taking the bumps, you've got Rusev being ridiculous, you've got Jinder.
The Singh Brothers clapping at Aiden English's singing?
Like, and
can
as
you imagine their reactions to that? That'd be great.
As a mid-card act, I think that's fun. I think it's fine. You know, it's just, then it doesn't break story. You know, then it, because it's like, you know, you were talking about the Ascension earlier on. They're not the same, but like, the Ascension are great in a little opening match thing at a house show, but can you imagine if the Ascension were in Hell in a Cell? You'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake, what's going on? So, it'll be interesting because I don't know when the next... Is the next SmackDown Live pay-per-view before Survivor Series? Let me just figure this out here. Hold on. I'm going to try and see here while we're on the blower if there's one before Survivor Series because... Let me just have a look.
I don't know, because Raw has TLC, right?
Raw's got TLC on October 22nd. Now, there's not anything else.
But I don't think there's another SmackDown one.
Yeah, no, I think the next one is Survivor Series. So, you know, there's not really going to be an opportunity for Jinder to go up against someone until at the earliest Survivor Series. And even then, I don't know. I mean... Last year, am I not right in saying last year AJ Styles was on Team SmackDown, so he wasn't defending the title at that point. So
right,
yeah. So I guess we'll see. I mean, I would imagine he keeps the belt through this India tour in December. So you know, the December pay per view at the earliest is probably what we're looking at. But I guess we will see. AJ Styles is interviewed backstage by Renee Young. Sorry, just the other thing I was going to say is with Nakamura, I do think you need to do a rebuild with him. And I think that what I would like to see is I'd like to see him have a big showing in the 5-on-5 match, Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. That's what I'd like to see.
I think that would be great. I would argue that you need to do a build with him and not even a rebuild, but that's...
Yeah, no, but I think you can hit both. You can kill two birds with one stone, right? You can,
yeah, absolutely.
You can rebuild for the people who buy into him, and you can build... I actually think he could do really well from, like, bringing, like, there's certain people who listen to this are just going to be like, no, don't involve him. But, like, I would, like, maybe bring in JR and do some sit-down stuff that's not, like, you know, going to be heavy Nakamura talking, but kind of tell the story of his career, you know, and talk about what he's done and, what and you know, maybe it's all built into, you know, he wants to main event WrestleMania or something. Give him a goal and... show some history and give him a story and see if something can be built from that. So
yeah, I mean, I would love to see them use Nakamura better and have more of a character to him and build to better matches and stuff. I mean, that's all that I've always wanted from Nakamura. I just haven't seen it, which is a bummer.
Because what they did with him, I think, with Jinder was they kind of went, right, okay, people love this Nakamura guy, let's use him to get Jinder over more. And I think what it's probably done is just take down Nakamura rather than build up Jinder. I mean, so let's talk about, before we go into AJ and stuff, Jinder's not on the show. Any
nope.
thoughts?
It's interesting, right? Like, I think it just kind of speaks to the WWE champion does not feel like a big part of the show, because I don't think anyone missed him on the show, right? It's not like anyone's going, oh, I really wanted to hear from Jinder Mahal today. He just doesn't feel like a big deal as champion, and I think that's, you know, I mean, we talk about it all the time. He doesn't feel like a main eventer because he's not. And it says something. I think, wasn't Randy Orton off the show like after WrestleMania 2 or something? Or maybe, no, I'm getting that wrong. But
no, it was after he lost to Jinder, right? Was he not off a little bit after that?
Oh, that could be, yeah. So it was after he lost that he was off.
I mean, we all go through post-traumatic stress disorder, so...
Obviously. But I mean, it's one of those things where he's not a character that, you know, I missed at all on the show. I didn't really need to see him later in the night. And it makes the WWE Championship feel like it's not all that important because it's not even referenced on the show as something that people want. So I think that's another part of the problem, is that people aren't expressing interest in the WWE Championship. Everyone should be clamoring for it with Jinder Mahal as champion, but that's not the story they're telling.
Renee Young interviews AJ Styles. AJ talks about how confident he is he's going to win the US title back because he never got pinned on Sunday. He talks about, you know, Baron Corbin makes mistakes, he's prone to doing so, and AJ said SmackDown Live is the house that AJ built, and I'll be damned if a lone wolf is going to steal my title and walk out with his head held high. And then AJ says it's the end of days for Baron Corbin's title reign. Scripted, but, you know, I liked AJ's confidence, and it played into the match, so.
Yeah, cool. It did, and it was fine.
So
Sandra. I will say, for the tag match before this, it was just kind of funny because, again, we were in such a, like, pro Randy Orton crowd that I was getting glared at heavily for booing Randy Orton and you know, sort of almost booing Nakamura, but not really, because I was just cheering Aiden English. But
well, say there's a scale of 1 to 10. Like, 1's the least you can be booing Randy Orton, and 10's the most. How vigorous was your booing of Randy Orton?
At SmackDown, it was probably about an 8.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, I went more all out for Hell in a Cell than I did for SmackDown.
So take us through step by step. We see two men with hoods over their heads. They turn around. It is Eric Rowan and Luke Harper. Rowan has the mask on. He takes it off. They have big giant hammers. Luke Harper talks about Eric Rowan talks about there's no conscience or moral compass. The wicked will rise. And they say, you know, broken bones, severed spines. They call themselves the Bludgeon Brothers. Samuel Wallace on our Facebook community said that he feels like Sondra is now writing creative. which, you know.
I wouldn't call them the Bludgeon Brothers if I were coming up with that. I mean, the name is not the best, but like,
talk me through your whole process here as this comes up on screen.
So, like, during AJ's promo, I was looking down at my phone a little bit and, you know, paying attention, but not really, you know, I was multitasking, I will say. And so then they come up on the screen, and I didn't realize what was happening at first. And then once it finally clocked, I was like, oh, shit, that's Eric Rowan. Oh, my gosh, Luke Harper is actually on screen. And I went, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. And then Mr. Sonder laughed at me a lot. And then everyone else around me was just kind of like, what is her problem? Like, I'm just like,
she boos Orton and Nakamura and she likes this?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I'm very familiar.
And I'm like, yep, uh-huh, that's totally in character for me. And I lost it. I didn't even care what they were saying. I didn't even hear a lot of what they were saying. I heard Bludgeon Brothers. I heard that they were something about destruction. They had hammers. They had hoods on. They were in a dark, spooky place. They are together again, and they are going to be back on my TV, and I could not be more excited. I don't care if the name is stupid. I don't care if I don't know why they're back together. I want to know why they're back together, but like, at this point, I will take it, because I am all about a dark and scary and violent Luke Harper and Eric Rowan coming back to SmackDown Live. This was the best present I could have received, and I was so, so happy that I got to see it.
Of all the places for them to do it, was here. When they came on screen, I just got so giddy, because I was like, oh, they're back! Like, they're going to be a really cool addition to the tag division. I liked their look. I know Samuel Wallace had also said in the community that apparently they're ripping off War Machine. I've never seen War Machine, so I can't tell you if they are or not. But, you know, I'm one of those terrible wrestling fans. Like, yay, look at this original gimmick. And people are like, no, it's been around for ages.
Yeah.
I'm just one of those terrible wrestling fans. But I have a theory, Sondra.
Do you?
So they're called the Bludgeon Brothers.
Right.
BB. 2B. Did they attack our beautiful Breezango?
I think they might have. Oh my goodness, dun, dun, I think dun. You cracked it. I cannot wait to see this interaction.
I mean, to be fair, about 10 other people cracked the same thing. I don't want to take full credit, but I did think of it at the time. I just didn't tweet it out, which of course will make people think that I copied it from people. But yeah, Harper and Rowan back, that's great. They're a great tag team. They had great matches with the Usos a couple of years ago, so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. And also, they're not held down by Bray Wyatt, so good.
Yep. That breaks my heart, but you're not wrong. You're not wrong
Although,
at all.
I want Norman Bates' Sister Abigail so badly at that pay-per-view. My God, I want him to be full drag. Anyway, Bobby Roode comes out, makes his entrance, says it's, you know, glorious that he's here, but Dolph Ziggler attacked him, so he wants him out for a fight. Dolph Ziggler comes out, he's got hair like a lion. Ziggler congratulated him on having his first pay-per-view match. Dolph talked about, you know, the fans sing along with his entrance, then the bell rings. Dolph Ziggler said with a straight face that he is the greatest in-ring performer in WWE history.
At this point, I went, but you lose all the time.
So basically, long story short, they have a back and forth. They're going to have a match next week. And that's that. I don't really care, but I am happy this is a TV match. I mean, the thing is, did anyone think this was going to make it onto the Survivor Series pay-per-view? Oh,
no.
My God. Also, by the way, I'm considering, I don't want to say I'm going to do it, but, you know, Robert and I used to do those flashback shows for WrestleMania. I'm considering doing some for Survivor Series. It depends whether I can get people together, blah, 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 blah. But you never know. We'll try and do some stuff for Survivor Series leading up to it. Not 7 Days, 7 Podcasts, though. Go away with your 7 Days, 7 Podcasts thing. It's not happening again. Leave us alone till March. Then
we'll be back then, and we'll be excited about it.
Then suggest it. So, main event time, Baron Corbin versus AJ Styles for the US title. I thought they had a pretty good match. I enjoyed it. It was about 12 minutes. AJ Styles, near the end, runs towards Baron Corbin on the apron, but Corbin grabs him and tosses him to the floor, and AJ hurts his knee. It was a cool spot. Then Corbin brings AJ back in the ring, hits the End of Days, and gets the clean pin on AJ Styles to retain his US title. After the match, Renee comes in for an interview, and Baron Corbin said that the fans could look at the title and eat it because it's not going anywhere, and they could cry and cry and cry, and he's going to buy a boat and float down the river of their tears. Sondra, talk to me about the match, Corbin pinning AJ clean, and the post-match promo.
I thought this match was good. A lot better than I expected, actually. Because we've seen, you know, Baron Corbin matches, doesn't really matter who they're with. They don't tend to be very exciting, but I think this was actually, I wouldn't say it was like the greatest match I've ever seen. It's one of the better Baron Corbin matches I've seen for sure. And I think AJ Styles did an excellent, excellent job in this match. I mean, not that both of them didn't, but you could tell AJ was really working hard to make Baron Corbin look believable. And by the end of the match, the way it went with all the back and forth, like, I believe that Baron Corbin could pin AJ Styles with the End of Days. It bums me out a little bit just because I really like AJ Styles, but I don't think it hurts AJ Styles to lose to him. I mean, if they want to make Baron Corbin any sort of dominant champion or any sort of, you know, big asshole monster guy, then he needs to get clean wins. And it makes sense to me, I guess. It's not my favorite because I'm not all in on Baron Corbin as champion, but he is an utter dickhead, isn't he? Saying that he's going to float on a river of our tears. That's the kind of character stuff I like from Baron Corbin. I like Big Vance Corbs, right? Because when he is talking shit to the crowd and actually sounding like he feels comfortable on the microphone, which I think he is more lately, then that aspect of his character works for me. So if he can, you know, continue working at improving his match quality, because he can't always be in there with AJ Styles, who's one of the best in the actual world, right? Like, he's going to have to defend his US title against other people at some point, and I don't know how compelling those matches are going to be. I think his character needs to carry him more than his match quality, but this totally did work for me, and the crowd was into it. The crowd was super into it, and like, there were kids around me just losing their minds for AJ Styles. Like, one of them at one point, I put it on Twitter, I can't remember exactly what it was, I don't have it in front of me, but he was just like, you know, no, you need to get up, AJ, or you become dead. Is that what you want, AJ? Get up! And like, just absolutely losing their minds. I'd say, like, AJ Styles and the Fashion Police and Ty Dillinger got like the biggest reactions all night. So it was very cool to hear the arena so behind AJ Styles. It's kind of nice to have a babyface that you want to cheer and a heel that you want to boo. And, you know, that's helpful in storytelling in these types of situations. So Baron Corbin might not do the flashiest things, but he doesn't have to. And he won. And, you know, that's fine if it gets AJ away from the US title scene and into the main event. Well, quote unquote main event, into the WWE title scene to potentially save us, then that would be amazing. I'm totally fine with AJ going on to tell a different story, because AJ as champion wasn't really clicking for either one of us anyway, and I'm not sure why that is, but maybe him just telling a different story is what's needed to kind of, I don't know, bring the spark back to AJ Styles too. So yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it.
I was a little bit confused by him pinning AJ clean here. I almost thought the reason that Ty Dillinger was in the match was to avoid doing that. So it was a little bit strange for me. But I don't think it was by any stretch like a kiss of death for AJ. You know, I like the idea that Baron Corbin, you know, took advantage of him on the apron, and that led to the kind of the knee injury, which led to AJ kind of being off his game, which led to the end of days. I think Baron Corbin's a good heel. I think he's I think that's the difference of why I'm more into Baron than Jinder, is that he takes advantage of the fact that people dislike that he didn't come up through the independent scene and he didn't pay his dues that way, and he uses that to his advantage and makes fun of fans for it. And I think gets a real genuine type of heat that I don't think that Jinder gets. So And also, Baron Corbin is not the world champion. He's got the mid-card belt here. They saw the error in their ways of giving him the briefcase, and they took it off him. And I think that long-term, this is the best way to go with him, is to put him in this mid-card scene. I thought he worked well with AJ Styles here. I know it's AJ Styles, so obviously you're, you know, chances of having a bad match. But I thought Corbin did well here, and I like him as US champion. And I like his gimmick, and I like that he's an arsehole. And I was cool with the victory, and I have to admit it, I'm now digging his new song. I do like it, so...
Since they added the lyrics, the new song is much better.
It is much better. Overall, though, I thought this was a good episode of SmackDown, so it's a thumbs up for me. My favourite full episode in a few months, I would say. So I really enjoyed it. What did you think in terms of your thumb?
See, I was thinking thumbs in the middle going into it, but then talking about everything that happened on the show, there actually was quite a bit of fun stuff. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up. I think, again, just... you know, the reaction or lack of reaction in the arena to like the end of the show being there live kind of maybe soured me on the experience a little bit, just as far as like, you know, the dark main event sucked. But no, overall, I think it's like, it's a middling to up, because I don't know if it was like super important, but I think the Kevin Owens Sami Zayn stuff brings it up. The tag stuff I think was just kind of confusing at the beginning, which is maybe why it didn't land quite as well for me. I wish Becky and Carmella had a story. But AJ Styles, Baron Corbin was much better than expected. So yeah, I would say, you know,
so where
pretty much
you,
a thumbs up show.
It's a thumbs up show. Okay. I was ready to almost like have to re-record with you later on to debate why this should be a thumbs up than a thumbs in the middle, but we got there in the end.
There was
a lot of fun stuff.
There was.
Sondra, where
just no pulp fashion.
Just no pulp fashion, which, you know, next week. Where can people find you on Twitter, Sondra, if they want to get in touch and say hi?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for all your support. We really appreciate it. Sondra and I will be back on Friday with Retro Raw, when the Legion of Doom need to either win the tag team titles or they have to go away, which either means more Godwins or less Godwins. So you can guess whose side Sondra's on.
Oh, boy. I wonder who I want to win that match.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.